ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
The whole of the nation can see what the Jewish community has been worried about for more than 2 years. The Jewish community was not crying wolf, was not playing the victim card too easily.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. Donald Trump loves maps, and as US president, he gets to look at lots and lots of very cool ones. One day in 2018, he was looking at maps in Key West, Florida. These maps belonged to the Coast Guard, and they showed suspected smuggling vessels off the US coast.
You look at the thousands and thousands of people that are going in 15 different directions from different countries, using the Pacific, using the Caribbean, using everything they could use to get through.
After he toured the naval station and looked at a submarine, he and his team headed back to Washington. Miles Taylor, a member of his team, has an anecdote that he says happened on board the plane.
I'm sitting there with Stephen Miller and a senior member of the Coast Guard.
This is Taylor speaking to The Left Hook with Wajahat Ali about a conversation he witnessed between Trump's senior advisor Stephen Miller and the head of the U.S. Coast Guard about those boats on the big map.
And Miller's grilling us on whether we could launch drone strikes on these boats. Wow. And I will never forget the Coast Guard commandant saying to Miller, "No, we can't do this. It would be a violation of international law." And Stephen, in his very unique voice, said, "Well, commandant, I don't think you understand international law."
Now, that's not actually a bad impression of Stephen Miller, for the record. This is Stephen Miller's voice.
Obviously, to do that would be a monstrous violation of international law.
Now, Stephen Miller denies ever having that conversation with the Coast Guard Admiral about using drone strikes on boats in the Caribbean Sea. And yet, fast forward to the second Trump administration, and
for the second time in 2 weeks, the American military has destroyed a boat allegedly smuggling drugs from Venezuela into the U.S.
American drones, reportedly following a plan created by Stephen Miller, started bombing boats in the Caribbean.
The Washington Post has reported a follow-up strike was ordered on a vessel in September to kill two people who survived the initial one, raising concerns on both sides of politics about whether a war crime was committed.
There was once a simpler time when ordering a missile strike on people who are drowning in the ocean would be considered a
monstrous violation of international law.
But it seems we are no longer in that time. Stephen Miller is unusual for a number of reasons. He's one of only a handful of staffers from the first Trump administration to carry over into the second. He's also one of the few original Trump staffers not to have written a tell-all memoir. But if you read any of the memoirs by people who have written them, they're full of stories like this, of people desperately trying to stop Stephen Miller from implementing his ideas. People like Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
As long as Stephen Miller is in charge of negotiating immigration, we're going nowhere. He's been an outlier for years.
For a long time, no matter which party was in power, the US government has operated within pretty defined guardrails. Legal, moral, bureaucratic, and procedural guardrails. But now, thanks to people like Stephen Miller, those guardrails are being dismantled, or in some cases, destroyed entirely.
To all ICE officers, anybody who lays a hand on you, or tries to stop you, or tries to obstruct you, is committing a felony. Obviously, Greenland should be part of the United States. And so that's a conversation that we're going to have. The powers of the president to protect our country are very substantial and will not be questioned.
So who is Stephen Miller, and how did he get into such a position of power? And is there anything that can get in his way? I'm Matt Bevan, and this is If You're Listening. In In the United States, there's a program for high school students run by the American Legion called Boys State.
Boys State and Girls State. One week that shapes a lifetime.
It's kind of a camp for teenage politics nerds.
You'll experience how government works.
Its alumni list is impressive. Neil Armstrong, Michael Jordan, John Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen, Bill Clinton, and Tom Brokaw.
I've encountered governors and senators, captains of industry, and prominent academics who also have the same fond memories of their experience at Boys State.
At the California iteration of Boys State in 2002, a 16-year-old Stephen Miller was running for an elected position on one of the mock county councils. Miller gave a speech to the other teenage boys in his group, gathered under a tree at California State University. Miller paced back and forward, declaring at the top of his voice that if elected, he would form a black ops force to spy on the other county groups, infiltrate them, and sabotage them. The boys loved it, of course, and Miller won with a resounding majority. To say he was interested in politics would be an understatement. He was a regular caller on right-wing talkback radio, primarily on the Larry Elder Show, and wrote letters to the local paper decrying the left-wing bias of his school teachers. That same year, at his high school in Santa Monica, Miller ran for class president and gave a similarly outrageous speech.
Hi, I'm Stephen Miller. I'm the only candidate up here who really stands out.
There are only a few clips available from his speech, but the quote that gets the most attention is this one.
Am I the only one who is sick and tired of being told to pick up my trash? And we have plenty of janitors who are paid to do it wrong.
At the end of his speech, he refused to stop talking and had to be escorted off stage. His behaviour at school was so unusual that one of his classmates made a little documentary about him.
I don't know much about him, but I know that he's pretty right-wing.
He expresses his views in an insulting way, and that makes him look like he has no integrity. And that's really unfortunate because he could really be a great politician.
The following year, when the US invasion of Iraq began, Miller was recorded by a classmate giving his opinion on what should happen to the Iraqi leadership.
But as for Saddam Hussein and his henchmen, I think the ideal solution would be to cut off their fingers. I don't think it's necessary to kill them entirely. We're not a barbaric people. We respect life. Therefore, torture is the way to go. Because torture, people can live. Torture is a celebration of life and human dignity.
The thing that interests me about these comments is, what is Miller doing here? Does he actually want to be able to spy on his classmates and be able to chuck his trash on the ground? Or is he trolling? Is he saying things that he knows are over the line, knowing that they will get a reaction from his audience? Well, he kind of answered that question himself during one of his speeches.
I will say and I will do things that no one else in their right mind would say or do.
One of his classmates had a theory.
Maybe he enjoys the infamy, like some perverted power trip or something, which I think is completely disgusting.
His friend Chris Moritz thought that people who got angry at Stephen Miller just didn't understand his sense of humor.
Personally, I would have laughed at that. He's just joking. It's a joke.
Watching these old videos of Miller, he clearly thinks that he's being funny, whether or not his audience is laughing.
I was talking to my doctor the other day, and I said to him, well, you know, I'm 17, I'm pretty sexy. Everything's going the way I want it to.
I was a teenage boy at roughly the same time Stephen Miller was, and I can tell you confidently that trolling, saying outrageous things to get a reaction, is very much a thing that teenage boys did at the time.
But something's just not going right. My hair is just receding. I look like I'm 35, and a balding 35-year-old at that. And he said, well, how much sleep are you getting? And I said, excuse me, what's sleep? Apparently, you're supposed to go to bed at nighttime. Usually, I sit in my room like this.
Stephen seems to have pitched himself as a class clown, an edgelord, a troll. So what happens when an edgelord who breaks societal norms and delights when people get upset reaches a position of power? Well, we got a clear idea of this in the early stages of the first Trump administration, when Stephen Miller challenged one of the most well-established myths about America's history and identity. This story involves a poem. You probably know it, but in case you don't, here's the current Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, reading it when he was still a senator back in 2012.
Here at R.C. Wash Sunset Gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch whose flame is the imprisoned lightning and her name Mother of Exiles.
When this poem about the Statue of Liberty was written in the 1870s, the only physical manifestation in America of the mighty woman with a torch was the torch itself. It stood in Madison Square Park, held by a disembodied bronze hand and lit up by electricity, or, to put it more poetically, the imprisoned lightning. The statue's head and body were still in Paris. It was to be a gift to America from the French government and would be placed on a 30-meter granite pedestal.
From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame.
The trouble was, while the French were happy to pay for the statue, they expected the Americans to fund the $250,000 pedestal. And the Americans were in a recession and couldn't afford it. So a fundraiser was created. A successful 33-year-old Jewish poet named Emma Lazarus was asked to donate a poem which would then be auctioned to raise funds.
She imagined the site of a giant statue at the entry point of a great nation. But unlike the great monuments of the past, this would not signal an empire. Instead, it would signal one's arrival to a place of opportunity and refuge and freedom.
Her handwritten manuscript was sold at auction for $1,500. Thousands of other Americans donated money to build the pedestal, and by 1886 it was ready for the 350-piece statue to be assembled on top of it. Emma Lazarus died of cancer a year later, aged 38. In 1903, a plaque with her poem on it was added to the pedestal. Her words became a core principle of America, as wave after wave of immigrants entered the country during the 20th century. One line of the poem in particular has become very popular. You know the one.
Give me your tired and your poor, your huddled masses.
Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses.
Your tired, your poor, your huddled masses.
Support for Emma Lazarus's powerful words became bipartisan. As Marco Rubio said in 2012,
this is who we were. For 225 years, this is who we've been. And the question now is this who we will remain? If we lose this, we lose ourselves.
In August of 2017, Stephen Miller, now a staffer in the first Trump administration, was asked how a plan put forward by the president to decrease immigration intake and prioritize English-speaking migrants for entry aligned with the meaning of Emma Lazarus's poems.
What you're proposing, or what the president is proposing here, does not sound like it's in keeping with American tradition when it comes to immigration. The Statue of Liberty says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. It doesn't say anything about speaking English.
Here's Stephen Miller's response.
I don't want to get off into a whole thing about history here, but the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of liberty enlightening the world. It's a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty.
There is no way any White House staffer in living memory from either side of politics would have considered saying this. Lazarus's words had become as significant as the American flag or the national anthem. And in the words of 2012 Marco Rubio,
if we walk away from this, we walk away from what makes us different and special and unique from all the nations on the earth.
But Stephen Miller wasn't like any other White House staffer in living memory, and it appears he wants to make that fact known.
We go now to the White House briefing room and President Trump's senior policy advisor, Stephen Miller.
During Trump's first term, Miller made headlines for attacking the independence of the judicial branch.
We have a judiciary that has taken far too much power and become, in many cases, a supreme branch of government. One unelected judge in Seattle cannot remake laws for the entire country.
Couldn't quite suppress a grin there, but he wasn't done.
Our opponents, the media, and the whole world will soon see, as we begin to take further actions that the powers of the president to protect our country are very substantial and will not be questioned.
This interview was received by the media and the whole world exactly as you would expect it to be received.
Will not be questioned? Let me test that theory. What the f*** are you talking about?
The president will not be questioned? You're unworthy to be in the White House. You're unworthy to be in government if that's what you believe.
The only way that statement could be more terrifying is if he yelled it in German.
To most government employees, this level of direct personal criticism would be tough to take. But for a troll, this is part of the payoff. Remember Miller's high school motto?
I will say and I will do things that no one else in their right mind would say or do.
According to the memoirs of former staffers, Miller was a lot. He was so relentless in his efforts to enact tough immigration policies that people were actually kind of scared of him. Career officials in the Department of Homeland Security tried to avoid talking to him so he couldn't badger them into doing things they thought were illegal or wrong. According to Jonathan Blitzer from The New Yorker, at one point the acting Secretary of Homeland Security started taking his meetings in a classified security bunker which blocks outside communication in order to prevent Miller from finding out details of a policy discussion. That's a very high school way of dealing with things. Former Defense Secretary Mark Esper wrote in his book that Miller once asked if he could decapitate the leader of ISIS, dip the head in pig's blood, and parade it around as a warning to other terrorists. Esper says he informed Miller that doing that would be a war crime. Esper told 60 Minutes on CBS that on another occasion, Miller asked him to deploy a quarter of a million troops to prevent migrants from crossing into the US over the border from Mexico.
And I think he's joking. And then I turn around and I look at him and these deadpan eyes, it's clearly he is not joking.
Esper, who talked quite a lot about being spooked by Stephen Miller's eyes, subsequently found out that he was working behind the scenes to form a plan for a military operation on the U.S.'s southern border.
Whatever happened to that plan?
Well, it died. I gave General Milley specific instruction to cease and desist, and that if anybody had any questions, you tell them they should call me direct. I never got a phone call.
So that was the defense secretary in the first Trump administration, blocking Stephen Miller's plan. Fortunately for Stephen Miller, Mark Esper didn't get a gig when Trump moved back into the White House. The guy who did get that gig, Pete Hegseth, had no such qualms with deploying the U.S. military.
Today we have an announcement from the Pentagon that 1,500 active duty troops will be sent to the southern border.
It's not quite a quarter of a million, but it ain't nothing. Now look, Donald Trump was re-elected in part due to his promise to enact tough immigration policies. An argument could be made that Miller is just the bulldozer that's clearing the road for Trump to enact the policies the American people voted for. But bulldozers are supposed to have brakes. Otherwise, they end up just going straight through someone's house.
The United States is using its military to secure our interests unapologetically in our hemisphere. We're a superpower, and under President Trump, we are going to conduct ourselves as a superpower.
Despite the fact that Stephen Miller's official title is Deputy Chief of Staff and Homeland Security Advisor, it's become clear that his remit is far greater than just immigration policy. He's reportedly been instrumental in the capture of the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and the saga over whether the United States was going to annex Greenland from Denmark.
Obviously, Greenland should be part of the United States. And so that's a conversation that we're going to have as a country. That's
so I'm not going to take it off the table that the U.S. would use military force to seize Greenland.
And of course, he's been a key player in orchestrating the massive federal law enforcement operations in Democratic-controlled cities across the country.
The gangbangers that you deal with, they think that they're ruthless. They have no idea how ruthless we are. They think that they're hardcore. We are so much more hardcore than they are. And we have the entire weight of the United States government behind us. What do they have?
Constitutional rights?
They have nothing behind them. So we are going to win. They are going to lose. We are going to rescue them.
It's unclear how Stephen Miller defines winning. But it appears that he's determined to win no matter what the cost. And if something happens that could jeopardize that goal, like ICE officers shooting U.S. citizens dead in the streets of Minneapolis, he's got a solution.
To all ICE officers, you have federal immunity in the conduct of your duties. And anybody who lays a hand on you or tries to stop you or tries to obstruct you is committing a felony.
Nobody inside the administration is going to stop him anymore. The human guardrails that kept him largely in check during the first administration are gone. And now Stephen Miller seems to be driving his break-free bulldozer wherever he wants.
You have immunity to perform your duties, and no one, no city official, no state official, no illegal alien, no leftist agitator or domestic insurrectionist can prevent you from fulfilling your legal obligations and duties.
The poetry of Emma Lazarus and myths about American values aren't barriers to someone who wants to push through them and show that they didn't really matter in the first place. But one thing does seem to be restricting him to some extent.
Minnesota residents were back on the streets today despite temperatures being well below freezing.
Videos showing the death of Minnesotans Alex Pretty and Renee Good led to a massive public backlash against ICE's tactics.
Call an ambulance.
The Trump administration is finding it harder to defend its immigration enforcement operation in Minneapolis.
Eventually, the backlash led to a back down and the withdrawal of federal forces from Minneapolis.
Donald Trump will continue to defend his immigration agenda, but seems to have realised that de-escalation is necessary to retain public support for his policy.
Now, generally, I have a neat little bow for the end of the episode, but I'll be honest, it is hard to know how to end a story like this. The administration may have withdrawn from Minneapolis and announced investigations into what happened there, but there's been no change of policy. Stephen Miller may not have been on TV for a few days, but he hasn't resigned. It's a tactical retreat, not a surrender. 1 year into the return of Trump, and it's clear that the pace of change is not going to slow down. Miller will continue to bulldoze the boundaries of what he can say and do, and take a lunch break before pushing even harder. We know this because it's been his political agenda since he was in high school.
I will say and I will do things that no one else in their right mind would say or do.
And there's no sign that Stephen Miller is planning to turn the dozer around anytime soon. If You're Listening is written by me, Matt Bevan. It's produced by Adair Shepherd and Pat Sunderland. Supervising producer is Kara Jensen-McKinnon. If you'll indulge me for a second, I want to talk about a bit of sad office news. James Valentine, the host of Afternoons on 702 ABC Sydney and ABC New South Wales, has retired in the midst of a long health battle. You might have heard about this, and anyone who's a listener of James will likely be feeling pretty crappy about it. But most won't know the contribution James made to making this show what it is.
Look, Matthew's young. How old are you, Matthew?
I'm 24, James.
And Matthew's 24, but he has the grey hair of a 54-year-old. It's really quite grey.
Yeah. Nobody has taught me more than James about being silly on the radio while still retaining your capacity for seriousness.
My plan is that I look 32, 33, and I can sort of sustain that until I am actually 32, 33. Then I can start dyeing it.
You've got a future plan.
Well, it depends. Yeah. I may be entirely grey by then, in which case it would be very noticeable if I started dyeing it black.
Get a new friend.
That's true.
Go to move countries, dye on the trip.
Yep.
And then, you know, that'll be all right.
It's nice knowing you, James.
And nobody's really done more to help us promote the show either. He invited me on his show every week for years to plug what we had on. Not only that, but he embraced my love of side quests and trivial facts, indulging my little rants about things like the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
It was the tallest building in Sydney until 1967. Did you know, James, that they tested it by putting 96 fully laden locomotives on top of it?
Well, they put 96 locomotives. They said,
They put 96 steam trains on top of the bridge.
Mm. Like, how do you reckon train driver number 96 felt? Are you sure it's not 95 is the limit? Are you sure 96 is going to be a lot?
Yeah.
Letting me embrace trivial facts on air is not something that most people would have done, but he did. And here we are. So thank you, James, from me and all of us. We're thinking of you. Meanwhile, we'll catch you next week on If You're Listening.